next. First, though, something is burning bright.
I'm Tiger Khan, a powerful politician. And some may say, criminal.
Rudyard Kipling's classic story reimagined in the concrete jungle of present-day India.
There is a battle inside each of us. Two wolves, and you must decide which wolf will win.
Recorded in Mumbai, starring Omkar Kulkarni, Namit Das, and Rajat Kapoor.
Mo escaped me once, but I will hunt him down. It's a jungle out there.
The Jungle Book, beginning on Saturday afternoon at 3 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Back to this evening on Radio 4 with stories, conversation and laughter. It's Strictly Between Ourselves.
Hello everyone. Welcome to Between Ourselves with Tara Flynn and Marion Keyes. Welcome back to the show, which takes a deep dive into the non-fiction writing of one of Ireland and Europe's and the Northern Hemisphere's and forget the world. Well, why stop there? Who'd contradict us? The universe's most preeminent storytellers. My lovely friend and host, because we're in her house again, it's Marion Keyes.
Hello. Hello. Hi, Tara. Hi, everyone.
We are back to visit you again in your home, Marion, for this global pandemonium series. We are socially distanced, of course, as is the fashion of the times. We're taking this so seriously that we have even sent our lovely producer, Steve, into the other room with his cables and his headphones. And we really like him.
Yeah, we do. We're very fond of him. Yes.
I saw you were trying to start a bunker out the back.
The panic room.
Oh, the panic room.
Sorry, the panic room. Bunker. Yes. Yeah. The shed.
A shed for panicking in. I'd love one of those.
Yeah, I think actually that would be a really useful room in many houses, like an anxiety room.
I call that the bathroom. I just lock the door and go in and have a sit with the lid down. I have a sit on the toilet and just breathe. But I'd like something fancier.
And maybe like it's got a load of children's books in it. And, you know, a telly with like lovely series that where nothing bad ever happens. And a pick and mix.
Oh.
And then lots of bean bags, maybe. I think this is an idea.
I think the government should give us all a panic shed. But we don't need one today because we're all socially distanced and completely safe, which is the main thing. We're talking about health this week and your bad health in particular. Have you ever tried, it's not good to do with COVID, but have you ever tried quack treatments of any kind?
In my earlier years, I was a lot more suggestible. I did a lot of herbs and things where like, people would make up a tincture for me, like in a little brown bottle. Yeah, I mean, the word is so delicious. And it would be like specifically for my incredibly unusual ailments. And I suppose I felt at the time that it helped me. But the older I've got, the more I have become disinclined to be fiddling around in stuff I don't understand.
No leeches, no leeches.
No leeches
or
recently.
A frog at a crossroads at midnight.
Well, yeah, the crossroads, it's always alluring. In my 20s, when I was really, I suppose, kind of lost and looking for something to make me feel halfway normal. Yeah, I would have probably tried the leeches or that malarkey with the drinking glasses and cupping. Is that what it's called? On your back.
I think you're right. And I think that's how general health links into the pandemic in some ways is that lack of control. When we do feel at our most lost, it's when we're most likely to try something a bit out there.
Oh, absolutely.
People want to feel good. That's what health should be about. But when I say good health, what image comes into your mind?
It's an awful one. When you say your good health or good health in general, I think of the Nazi youth. I think of like all these incredibly handsome, healthy, blondie German types, boys and girls like marching up the Alps in the summer, singing songs about eugenics and drinking goat's milk and just being really bursty with health. That's the picture in my head.
So there's a little element of a draconian regime in the picture of good health.
It's almost terrifying. It's really sort of aggressive, that good health. Like I like people who are a bit grey looking and who might have a, you know, a bit of a limp for a while. I like people who are less than optimal.
So not perfect, but at their own best.
at their own best, exactly. And nobody needs to drink goat's milk or wear Heidi dresses or have those plaits, but then they put them over the tops of their head and they tie them together. That's gravity a really defying. Good health thing.
Is it?
Yeah,
a good...
oh yeah, yeah. That's good health hair.
That yes. is terrifying, but I cannot wait to see that movie. It's so good. It's so dystopian and brilliant. So that's good health. But to start, we must address the ailing elephant in the doctor's waiting room, Marion. Is yours really the sickest family in the whole of Ireland?
Well, I haven't actually done scientific research, but anecdotally, I think we very much are. Having said that, I am very prone to melodrama, to hypochondria and to exaggeration. So I'm not exactly sure if we could be literally the sickest family in Ireland, but we're very sick. Oh. You know, we're very prone to things. And then the people who have married into us, they have always, like, never had a day sick in their lives till they met a Keys. And then suddenly they're being felled left, right and centre.
Do you mean that you pick things up quite easily, or do you all hear about a thing and suddenly...
We all have it.
All have it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, we all think we have it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely at the start of COVID, we all thought we had it. None of us have had it. but yeah. Yeah, we're suggestible. And I'd be the worst one. Also, not hardy. I am not hardy. Mammy Keys is not hardy. Her mother was not hardy. And they actually have a saying, and I'm going to try and translate it, but it's, we don't have the howling out. We don't have the holding out. It means we don't have stamina. And I'm the same. You know, I can give something my all for a certain amount of time, and then the lack of the holding out hits me and I have to go off and lie down for a while. So, yeah, we're lacking in stamina. We are gifted with imagination, exaggeration and melodrama. So, yeah, it's a bad sort of combination.
You do love a chemist shop.
Oh, I love them.
You and yeah. Mammy Keys even
oh,
have a
yeah.
game.
We have a game. We do. Yeah, we both love chemists. And like, I'm one of the only people I know who will actually go to a chemist's to browse, like the way you would in a boutique or something like that. So yeah, we have this fantastic game and it's a very impromptu one. And she'll suddenly shout out, hairbands. And then that's the sign that the game is afoot. And so then I'll shout back, plasters. And then she'll shout back, cotton buds. And I'll shout back, laudanum. And yes, I mean, that's just wishful thinking on my part. Yeah, and we keep shouting the names of things you get in chemists until we run out of them. And the last person who can't name something is the loser. And often, like, we'd be with a crowd of people and suddenly she'd look at me and she'd make the face and she'd go, hairbands! And you see, you cannot refuse the challenge. Once the challenge is made, no matter where you are, you must accept or else you've lost, do you see?
Oh.
Ireland in the 80s was grim. This was how we entertained ourselves.
Well, as a special treat, and as so many people at the moment can't safely go to the actual shops, in this piece, Marion becomes our very own personal shopper and takes us on a tour of one of those very favourite places in her world, the chemists.
Once a month, I go to my local chemist to pick up my anti-mad tablets, and each visit gives me so much pleasure that, frankly, I wish I had to go every day. I hand over my prescription to my lovely pharmacist. We'll call him Edward, although his name is Connor. And while he assembles my madness begone kit, I have the option of sitting peacefully on the chemist chair. I love chemist shops so much that I actually schedule visits to them on foreign holidays. It's genuinely a highlight of any trip, the way other normal people get all excited about visiting the Mad King's castle, or having a traditional gulag dinner in the salt mines, or whatever a location's USP is. Reasonably priced foreign skincare always thrills me, especially in France. Ditto shower gels. Similarly, local cosmetic brands seem alluring simply because of their unfamiliarity, and I buy with enthusiasm. Although as soon as I get home, the lustre vanishes, and I'm mildly appalled as I survey the pile of tat I bought. But what really excites me is medication. If something is available over the counter that I need a prescription for at home, I itch to buy it, even when I'm in perfect health. Except for that time I was in Laos in Southeast Asia, and loose Valium tablets were for sale in a metal bowl. You helped yourself with a scoop, exactly like a pick and mix, and got charged by the weight. Because I've done so much research into chemists, I have strong opinions about what makes a place perfect. Each well-appointed emporium should have one chair. Two would also be acceptable in case you got a crock off. Two equally infirm people both looking for a sit down. But three chairs are too many. Three would encourage chat. And above all, I valued the peace and quiet of chemists, where the only sound, like the soothing babble of a distant stream, is the whisper of a worried man disclosing details of his strange rash to Edward. I usually spurn the chair, pick up a basket, and discover all kinds of things I hadn't realised I needed. It's like being in an Aladdin's cave. The feet section is a particular delight, and blister plasters always make the cut. And are you familiar with the tubey things for bunions? Sadly, I don't have bunions myself, yet. Of course, I live in hope there's plenty of time. But perhaps I might have a visitor to my home who would say, listen, any chance you'd have a tubey thing for a bunion? I've been caught short. It could happen. The bandages section also holds particular allure. Whenever I gaze upon those rolls of stretchy salmon-coloured stuff that could be used to strap up a sprained ankle, I vow for the millionth time that this will be the year I do a first aid course so I can be an emergency first responder should anyone take a tumble with me in the vicinity. But perhaps it's best I don't do one of those courses because there's a serious chance that I might start impersonating a doctor. If I may speak philosophically, I find that medical products can connect me with the suffering of my fellow man. I mean, what goes on in a person's life that they need a latex finger coverer? Never mind walking a mile in a person's shoes. Wear their latex finger coverer for 10 minutes and see how that feels. Moving on, I usually throw some cotton buds into my basket. Cotton buds will always come in handy. And fizzy vitamin C is a great cure-all. You'd pity the home that doesn't have any. And a couple of makeup sponges, and a bottle of nail varnish remover, and some eyebrow dye. It's always a particular thrill when something that's been advertised on telly actually appears in the shop. The day a well-known pain-relieving gel arrived was a great one, and immediately I snapped up three tubes, fearful that they'd sell out, like a limited edition nail colour from Chanel. Some chemists stock fancy cosmetic brands, but mine has the cheapest range I've ever encountered, rock bottom. I can never stop myself from picking up a nail varnish or two. Then I arrive at the strange perfumes, clearly left over from Christmas. Peculiar acrid smells by pop stars whose career is on the wane. They never fail to get me in the back of the throat, which serves to remind me to buy some cough sweets. A little chat about my purchases always enhances my experience. Edward might say in surprise, "You have a bunion now." Blushing slightly, I admit that I'm simply anticipating the needs of some future as yet unknown guest to my home. "It's good to plan ahead," he agrees. "Anything else I can get you?" "Painkillers, please. Any version is fine. Surprise me." "Indigestion remedies, the liquid, the tablets and the fast melts. I never know what I'm going to be in the humour for." "Cold sore ointment, the pump, not the tube." "Oh, what the hell, throw in the tube too. Life is for living." "And I might as well pick up some antihistamines. I know it's only March, but hay fever season will be upon us at some stage. Is there anything I've missed? Anything new and exciting?" The last time I asked this, Edward, with some pride, produced a little bottle of eye drops. "It's to combat the itchy eyes people often get with hay fever, just out this week." "Well," I said, all excited, "in that case, I'll take it." So I pay for my purchases and leave with my bulging bag. And I'm already looking forward to next month. Thank you.
In the piece, you do mention your madness be gone kit, and you're very open about medication and its usefulness. Do you think there's still a stigma about medication and mental health?
I do. Yeah, yeah. I do. But it's really not as bad as it was. My mother was telling me that, like, when she was in her teens or early 20s, an awful lot of relationships, marriages were like based on made matches. You know, they weren't spontaneous romantic things. But if you were agreed to get married to somebody and then it came out that their uncle had mental health issues, the engagement could be broken without any comeback, because it was like, you can't be marrying into madness, you know. So I suppose it's not as bad as that now, but it's still fairly bad. My wish would be that we could treat a bout of poor mental health the way we treat a bout of flu. Say if you come into work and you were coughing and spluttering and everything, and somebody said, "Are you all right?" And you could say, no, I don't feel at all. And they'd say, well, look, would you go home, you idiot? What are you doing coming in here? Go home and go to bed for 2 days and take loads of Lemsip and mind yourself. You know, but you, if you come into work and said, you know, I don't feel great. My thoughts are so bleak and I can't stop thinking about death and I'm just overwhelmed with sorrow. And this happens to me now and again, but when it comes at me, it's very bad. You know, and the person would say, but what are you doing here? You're not well. Go home. Watch nice telly, eat nice things, go to bed with a hot water bottle. Like, wouldn't that be lovely?
Wouldn't it be great? And yeah. Then the stigma around medication, I think even some people are afraid to go to their GP and ask for help or a bit of technology.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of people go, oh no, I wouldn't take tablets. Yeah, but they would if they were physically unwell.
Yeah.
You know, if they broke their leg, they'd be howling for morphine. When you are genuinely depressed with a capital D, take the tablets for the love of God. Why struggle through? You know, if you had diabetes, you'd take your insulin.
You'd at least have a chat with your GP about
it. Exactly. Yeah. It makes me sad that people are so harsh on themselves and harsh on others.
Yeah, it's true. Not at the chemist, though. No, there's no harshness there.
Oh, no.
Now, another question. You talked about those perfumes, those Christmassy perfumes.
Yeah.
What happened, not just to Lotharic, but Lotharic style ads.
Nudie, gorgeous looking people along by the sea.
Yes,
is that the
girls
one?
Girls about town turning around sharply to camera.
Oh yeah, with the swishy hair.
Swishy hair.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes, over their crimpling coat. Tramp, was that one?
I think Tramp was one. Yeah. Tramp by Lotharic.
Coaty.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 4711. Yes.
Now we're in the zone.
Yes.
Yeah, and they always had a brilliant song that went along with them.
They did, yes.
I want fewer reworkings of incredible classics to an orchestra, more songs about the perfume and the woman who might wear them.
Yeah.
There she goes. She doesn't smell bad.
She's a Lotharic girl. Like something like that,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, perfect.
She doesn't smell bad. Was that one of the words?
Listen, I was aiming low. But
she doesn't smell of chips.
Yeah. Chips are yesterday's news.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are available. We are available.
We are available.
As soon as the series ends. What about chemists abroad? How do they measure up?
Oh, I will go to any chemist when I'm away. Like, it's a way of getting to know how people live. I was in one in Samarkand. I mean, even the name is so lovely. Yeah, I went to Uzbekistan and I was sick. And I didn't actually know it at the time, but I had a sinus infection. And there was no real way of getting to a doctor. I had no idea how you did it. So myself and himself went into a chemist there. And it wasn't like a chemist here in that everything was behind the counter. And I didn't know what I wanted because everything was in, I suppose, either in Uzbeki or Russian. So I asked the young man, did he speak English? And he didn't, because nobody there speaks English. So I thought, I'm going to have to act out my symptoms. So I started coughing and he looked really alarmed. And then he disappeared into the back room and he brought out another man, obviously his boss. So I had to repeat the cough and then that started the real cough. And then I was trying to convey how bad my headache was. So I had my hands on my head and I was reeling around the shop making Chewbacca noises, those kind of mournful howls. And the two men were just thunderstruck and they obviously were really, really sympathetic. And the minute I finished, they wanted to applaud, but they knew it would be unseemly. And they like lunged towards the medicines. It was like I won an award, you know, the best performance in a chemist in Samarkand of a very bad headache. They gave me the Golden Salpidine Award. Like they were pressing Salpidine on me because, you know, in this part of the world, if you want to buy that well-known codeine-based painkiller, you have to answer 1,000 questions and you have to be, you know, taken into a back room and you have to have your fingerprints taken and you have to have a psychoanalytical test done to see that you can be trusted and everything. And only then will you be sold the red box of happiness. Mm-hmm. But no, they couldn't give them to me fast enough. Going into the back room, coming out with like wheelbarrows full of the stuff.
And that's SAMARKKAND. Thank you, Mary. These are excellent tips for the future.
Yeah, but yeah, you see, you never know what you're going to get. It's funny. Yeah, it's funny how some things are just so available. They just don't care. Like there are no laws.
It's time For a bit of fitness, what would health be without a bit of fitness? Now, one thing very few of us actively yearn for, we might like it, but we don't actively yearn for it, though we know it'll make us feel good, is strenuous exercise. But listeners, make sure to grab some water now and a sweat towel, because it is time for Marion to take us to class.
I did a kettlebells class, and oh my good God. What happened was, one morning himself, and this is a fairly regular thing, went off to run up the vertical side of Lough Nacuilla, one of the highest mountains in Ireland. He's always at that lark. If he's not hairing up the sides of mountains, he's going for 50-kilometre hikes in the hills in the dark, or doing one of those wretched endurance courses where you have to carry concrete bollards over 12-foot high walls and crawl on your belly under a blanket of razor wire and other similar miseries. And it dawned on me that the disparity in our fitness levels was becoming a bit of an unbridgeable gap. Perhaps it was time, once again, I tried to start exercising. A million years ago, in the early 90s, I used to do a lot of aerobics classes. In fact, I'd been fairly fit. Perhaps because of that, the idea of doing star jumps, grapevines and all the rest of it fired me up with a certain can-do vim. Aerobic classes, I decided, would be my route back to exercise. As luck would have it, a 40-minute class was being held that very morning in the local community gym. I'd only have to pay for this one class instead of signing up for membership that would last 700 years. So I decided that the universe was telling me to go. A quick aside here. The next time I think the universe is personally contacting me, I should do a reality check. Anyway, before I could talk myself out of it, I went along, only to discover, after I'd paid, got changed, and was in a group with 9 or 10 other women, regulars, who all seemed to know each other, that it wasn't an aerobics class, but a kettlebells class. Weights, oddly shaped weights. And because someone had lost the key to something, the only ones available for the class weighed 8 kilograms. I didn't have to translate that into pounds to know that it was an awful lot. Over a stone, as it transpired. Keenly aware of my limitations, I knew with sick certainty that I was in over my head here. But even more distressing was the thought of the inevitable judgment if I tiptoed away. The other women seemed like a nice crowd, and there was an irresistible all-in-it-together sensibility at work here. I decided to hide down the back of the class and after a while quietly crawl on my belly to the lockers. Then things went to hell entirely. The instructor, a very nice young man with tattoos and fancy facial hair, said we'd be doing the class outside on the basketball pitch. At the best of times, I'm no fan of any space without a roof and walls. But the true horror was that the pitch was right next to the number 4 bus terminal. And while the number 4 bus waited a good 15 or 20 minutes to embark on its route, it welcomed many passengers on board, most of whom raced up the stairs to the top deck, from where they had a bird's eye view over the basketball pitch, the perfect spot with which to study me and my incipient heart attack. Keenly aware of my bus-bound audience, the class began with a warm-up. My experience of aerobic warm-ups was grapevines and clappings and other sappy, easy things. But instead we were made to do sideways running along the 4 sides of the pitch. You know when you see football teams training on the telly and they're doing the sideways running, then they do that strange sprinting where they bring their knees up to their chests or their heels right up to their bums. That's what we had to do. It was genuinely brutal. I was in no way able for it, but I couldn't lose face, not with the people on the number 4 bus watching me so avidly. I was too mortified to look directly at them, but I was always aware of a sea of faces clustered the length of the bus, locked in rapt watchfulness. I could actually sense them bonding with their fellow commuters as they studied my form. Perhaps they might even open a book on how long it would be before I vomited. Only a matter of time. I'm giving her 4 minutes. Then we had to start flinging the kettlebells around, and I could barely lift my 8-kilogram one, never mind swing it. But then when I got some momentum, I couldn't control it, and it was a miracle that I didn't overswing and knock myself out. Although I did actually consider doing that, just to get out of doing the rest of the class. In the same way that First World War soldiers would shoot themselves in the foot, then pretend that the gun had accidentally fired while they were cleaning it, so that they wouldn't be sent back to the front. But I kept going, even though the class went on for well over an hour, and not the 40 minutes I'd been promised. Despite everything, though, there was a great sense of camaraderie, and I liked the teacher and the other people, and it only cost €6, and there was an appealing kind of honesty about the whole thing. I fashioned great plans to return, but I haven't as yet, because of one thing and another. But I will, yes, almost certainly, perhaps. Thank you.
Oh,
it was hellish.
It sounds
horrific.
I'm so glad you went through it for us. We're very grateful. Public fitness is a particularly cruel thing.
It really, really is, because it's so humiliating for most of us. You know, you're grand if you're doing it competitively or for your living. But for most people, we're way beyond our comfort. Well, I speak for myself. I was way beyond my comfort zone.
Yeah, I would be too. I would be too. And even when I'm in a comfort zone and it's something I'm used to doing, I still get very, very sweaty and I look like a pile of I don't know what, just in a jogging suit. So yeah, it's not good for that to be in public.
I'm still waiting to meet somebody who was on that bus. It's only a matter of time.
Have you ever taken that bus with the express intent of checking out the class?
No, I feel for the people and the pitch. No, I couldn't. I couldn't do that.
Did you go back for class number two?
I haven't yet, Tara. No, and it was only about 6 years ago. But, you know, that's not to say I won't.
Still there. Kettlebells are still
yes,
out there.
Yes, they are.
Waiting to be picked up.
Yes, and swung.
And swung, yes. Yeah. What are your views on, when we talk about fitness, things like diets or cures or extreme exercise, which you have spoken about in your work?
Again, when I was younger, it appealed to me in theory. You know, I liked the idea of instant gratification.
Mm.
Yeah, and that, like, if you just didn't eat for a week, you'd be skinny.
Yeah,
yeah, except you wouldn't be.
Those 70s diets, which were like, yes, just a black coffee,
yeah,
stretch that grapefruit out for 3 days and don't forget to smoke.
Yeah. That's the thing.
So healthy.
Yeah. Not. I mean, yeah, it's the smoking I really need to do. Yeah.
Not,
that would really help.
Definitely,
yeah,
not
know,
Dr. Keys.
No.
Yeah.
There's no point trying to do anything quick.
What makes you, this will be the last question, what makes you feel really, really great in mind, body and spirit?
I like going for a walk in a place in Wicklow. It's through a forest and it's beside a little river. And it's got little carvings of strange little things out of stories set into the walls, and it says things like, "We will hide here after the battle," or, "When I find the ring, I will propose."
Oh.
Yeah, and it's like being in a magic place. And from out to back, it's only about 7 kilometres. And everything, but I love the green light of the trees and I love the sound of the water. And I love the aerobic exercise that isn't too strenuous. You know, there are a little bit of steep climbs up and down, but nothing that would kind of burst blood vessels in your eyes. Yeah, that always lifts my spirits. You know, my husband does still run up the sides of mountains and stuff, and he is always trying to kind of say, come and try this and come and try that. But I'm very much a creature of habit. I found my happy place and that's the one I want to go to.
It sounds the furthest from a panic shed that it's possible,
yeah,
to get.
Yeah, it's true, yes.
Well, that brings us to the end of the show. My thanks once again, Marion, to you for your company and your wonderful stories, which really are a cure for what ails us. So you are a doctor. Thanks to our bodies and minds for giving us a never-ending array of conversation starters, such as How Are the Knees? And thanks also to our producer, Steve Doherty, for whatever it is he does out there in his